Hello, my name is Cynthia Ng, and you are tuning in to a Wani Review. On this episode, we will be taking a closer look on rare diseases. Now, an estimated 400 million people globally suffer from some form of rare disease, and that's one in every 15 persons worldwide. However, due to the rareness of these conditions, patients with rare disease often find themselves struggling to get access to information as well as treatment and care. So that's what we are talking about today. Joining me is Rochelle Jayasundara. She is a Senior Director, Global Consulting for Axios International, a healthcare access company, and they provide digital healthcare services. Malaysia is one of the countries that they are in. So thank you so much, Rochelle, for spending time with me today to talk about this.
Thanks, Cynthia. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Rochelle, I think there's so much to unpack when it comes to rare diseases because, like I mentioned, it's not often that we talk about it. But before we get into that, would you be able to just give us a brief introduction about yourself and also Axios International?
With pleasure. So I'm the Senior Director of Global Consulting at Axios International. And Axios is an organization that has been around actually for 25 years with a focus on healthcare market access. So what we do is specifically look at a given country, look at the emerging markets across the world, try and identify what are the barriers that patients go through when trying to access treatment, and then plug in holistic solutions, leveraging digital, as you mentioned, to make sure that these patients can get to treatment and also stay on treatment.
Okay. So what kind of healthcare access or facilities does Axios provide in Malaysia?
In Malaysia, we're highly focused and specialized, I would say, in providing individualized access to treatment. So we work within the healthcare system with multiple partners to ensure the appropriate delivery of care. So we support patients who may face financial barriers to access treatment, look at their individual situation and ability to pay, and help them through our programs get access to treatment and adherence to treatment.
Okay, well, we'll get more into that a little bit later in the show. I do want to come back to rare disease because that's our focal point. So let's talk about that. And if you can share with us, what is categorized as rare disease for some of our viewers who are not informed about these conditions? And I mentioned about 400 million people are affected globally, but in the bigger scale of the healthcare system, it's relatively small. And I guess that's why there's lack of access and also information about rare disease.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges when it comes to rare diseases is how do we categorize it? How do we define it, right? So if you look at the US, we're talking about usually fewer than one in 200,000 people. If you look at Europe, it's categorized as a disease that impacts a very small number of patients compared to the overall population. And in Malaysia, we're looking at one in 4,000. So you can see the extent to which it varies. And the biggest challenge is the fact that, as you're saying, it's rare, but in reality, it does impact many. And there are so many different diseases which make it a challenge to address and bring sustainable access.
So every country has its own definition of rare disease, or is there a standard definition on how is it categorized? Because this impacts a patient's access to care as well as to insurance coverage.
Insurance coverage, I think, is still a long way to go. In general, I would say a rare disease is any condition that impacts a very small number of patients compared to the overall population.
Okay, so can you talk about Malaysia then in terms of the rare disease care and access to treatment? Where are we on the wider scale compared to other countries?
So I would say there's definitely been huge progress towards addressing rare diseases in the country. There is a policy in place, there's clear criteria on how to define a rare disease. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned to you earlier that it should be one in 4,000 or fewer than that. It needs to be categorized as there is a case within the country, and there's also a big movement towards looking at listing these rare diseases, and it's continually being updated.
What are the more common forms of rare disease, if you can talk to us about that?
There are 6,000 to 7,000 different types of rare diseases, so I would not be able to even start.
Okay. Well, of course, the discussion today is really to address the access issue, especially when it comes to information, because due to the small number of people that have some form of rare disease, funding towards research is also lacking. So I just want to talk about RCS International and why did your company decide to, you know, venture into helping people with rare diseases, and maybe some of the solutions that are there right now to help patients with rare disease improve their quality of life and also access to treatment and care.
So I think we should start a little bit with the journey, right? Mm-hmm. So Access started 25 years ago with a focus at that time, it was HIV. There was a massive crisis. How do we address it? And once that had, let's say, been partially addressed, we then looked at more chronic conditions, started looking at oncology, what innovative solutions can we bring to really unlock access? And today we're in a situation where there is no solution that can be provided by a single party when it comes to rare diseases, because it has multiple challenges. There is lack of data. And this means that we also don't have enough physicians who fully understand the disease and are able to treat it, right? There is a handful of genetic specialists that are able to diagnose, able to support these patients throughout their journey. So our work has been focused on partnering with organizations that have already done a lot of work. For instance, here in Malaysia, we just recently signed an MOU with We Care Journey, which is an organization that focuses on spinal muscular atrophy patients, so SMA patients. And they've already done a lot on awareness, so we leverage that knowledge, and our focus is to bring an access solution.
And this WeCare is a nonprofit, an NGO?
Correct.
So it's a support group of sorts for the for a community suffering from that form of disease?
Indeed.
Okay, and I think a lot of people, patients and their families that suffer from rare disease conditions, the biggest form of support they can lean on is really the community, because, you know, as you said, it's the rare disease is often located outside of the hospital spending, funding, resources sphere. Talk about that kind of relationship that your company work with stakeholders, and how important is it to advance some of this access and treatment for rare disease?
For us, defining that space outside of the hospital is crucial in any patient journey, and even more so in rare diseases. Because this is a condition where, yes, of course, the patient needs to go and see the doctor, but then when they come home, there has to be that continuity of care. And these types of patients, you know, it's not just the patient, it's the caregiver, it's the entire family around them that need support, maybe emotional support, maybe psychosocial support. But this is where Access plays a role. So we work together with the patients and their families to understand what are the biggest challenges that they have and come up with a tailored intervention plan to really support them to stay on treatment.
Would you say there is some level of unconscious discrimination against people with rare diseases and their families trying to seek care and treatment?
Unconscious discrimination, I think, perhaps to some extent, but I think the key factor that we forget when we think of a patient is that that patient is a person, right? That patient is a kid trying to live a normal life, and often it could be the parents or other children that don't see that. So that's why the awareness part is very important, so that patients, communities understand what it truly means.
Okay. What stood out to me when I was researching about rare disease is that one of the data pointed out that almost 50% of rare disease cases involve children, because it's very much due to genetics.
Correct.
In your work supporting patients and families with rare disease, what kind of support do they need? And should there be a change in conversation, how we approach?
The change in conversation should be around how do we get together to make access to treatment, for instance, a reality for rare disease patients. How do we get together to make access to diagnosis faster? This should be the conversation that we should be having. And I think specifically when it comes to rare diseases, again, it's not a solution that one party can tackle alone. We need partnerships between public and private. We need to bring the communities of the patients. We need to involve the patients and their families, because to some extent, they are the ones that have the data, right? Mm. They live this day in, day out. So they are the ones who can support us to make more informed strategies.
You work in different countries. You oversee quite a number of, especially Asia-Pacific countries. And I do wonder, in terms of definition of rare disease, does it differ geographically? And the kind of diseases that occur in a specific region, how does it differ from one to another?
I would say there's quite a breadth in terms of diseases mm-hmm. across the Southeast Asia region. When it comes to the definition, it's the general definition is what I said earlier, right? Small number of patients compared to the overall population. And if you quantify that, yes, of course, it would change based on the size of the country.
But I suppose the challenges remain the same.
Correct.
And could you talk to us about that and how... if anything, during the last 2 years, we saw how much effort has been poured into healthcare due to the pandemic. Then and now, has there been any improvement in terms of awareness on rare diseases, or did the pandemic set us back a little?
I think the pandemic was a catalyst when it comes to healthcare in general. Okay. And even when it comes to rare diseases, there have been multiple campaigns ongoing in terms of awareness, both internationally, at regional levels, at country levels. So there's definitely been more noise, let's say, made. And this is a starting point. Mm-hmm. Look at us today, we're talking about rare diseases. So I think the pandemic has helped put this at the forefront, but we need to leverage that momentum to continue the discussion.
So for Malaysia, there's a lot that needs to be done still. I mean, we have quite a robust healthcare system, driven primarily a lot from the public sector, but it is stretched. It's a lot to handle, especially during the pandemic. Looking at best practices, and you coming in from a global perspective, when it comes to tackling rare disease, where do you see good examples, model that Malaysia could emulate to provide better access and treatment for rare disease patients?
It's a very interesting question, because we're always looking at kind of best practice and how do we plug and play models that exist elsewhere. But I'll tell you that even in Europe, this is not a question that's been fully tackled. Mm-hmm. Each market has its own challenges, I would say. And for Malaysia, the fact that it does have this very present public system, but also very strong private healthcare system when it comes to overall infrastructure. Perhaps the key is getting the two to collaborate. Mm. So we can facilitate the patient journey. There are, I think, 13 at the moment genetic specialists in the country across 5 main centers. So how do we build upon that knowledge so that we spread it out wider communities? Do we do awareness days? Do we do campaigns across the country, even more than what's being done now? Because, as I mentioned, there is a policy in place in Malaysia which covers quite a large list of rare diseases, but, you know.
But 13 out of a population of close to 32, 33 million, is that lacking?
It's definitely not enough. Probably, but this is not due to the country in itself. This is due to what we were discussing earlier, the fact that there are so many small cases. Mm. So by definition, you cannot have enough doctors handling these cases.
Right. And I think this leads to what I want to talk about next, which is technology. So technology and data sharing, I feel that it's essential, especially in the rare disease context, because the more you share data, the more you understand the disease and improve clinical care. Can we talk to us about, you know, how does data fit into advancing some of these initiatives that Axios is trying to do, and how does it improve overall access to treatment and care?
Data is crucial, and everybody talks about data nowadays, right? However, we need to understand what is it that we want to capture and why. And often where I see even projects go south is that people say, oh, I want all the data possible, but why? What is the objective? So if we are trying to really unlock access for us, from our perspective, we need to understand the patient journey. What are the hurdles that they go through from the moment that they are onsets of symptoms to the moment that they start to seek care? What does that pathway look like? And then the data points collected, we can pull trends, understand what solutions make sense or not. So this is the angle that we should take.
Okay. Is it something that your company is doing to extract and to make sense of the data? Because I think what doctors are facing is, on top of their day-to-day job, is all this overwhelming amount of data and what to do about it, really.
Absolutely. So in our case, we don't collect data for the sake of collecting data, I would say. We run multiple patient assistance programs and patient support programs. Naturally, with these interventions, we have multiple touch points with patients, with caregivers, physicians, pharmacists, so really multiple stakeholders along that patient journey that I was saying, and in that space outside the hospital, which is where we don't have information at the moment. So what we do is, through our programs, we're able to understand what makes sense for a specific patient. Are they suffering from affordability challenges? Right. Are they suffering from emotional barriers? And we then pull aggregated and anonymized information to improve the patient journey overall.
Okay, I do want to talk about the affordability aspect, but while we are on data, of course, one common question that comes up when we talk about sharing of data is patient privacy, the ethical and legal challenges. So how do you reassure patients about the safety and privacy of their personal information in the age of digital healthcare?
So this is a problem that we've been tackling for 25 years, I would say. Axios is a European company, so when GDPR was released, all of our processes internally were adapted to this. But even prior to GDPR being released, from our perspective, we have consents in place. So again, it's very important to understand, why are we collecting data, which data sets, what's the purpose, and the patient needs to be informed. So everything that we do is always compliant with international and local data privacy acts. The patient is informed as to how the data is being processed, and overall the data is kept anonymized and aggregated. So there will never be sharing of an individual patient data.
Okay, right. That's good to hear. I do want to go back to funding, affordability, I think more so, that I think especially for rare disease, because of the rarity of these conditions, treatment often is more expensive compared to normal diseases. I just wanted to get your thoughts about how technology can help reduce the barriers to getting these treatments and reducing the cost of doing so as well.
Technology, in my opinion, plays a role in connecting the stakeholders. I'm not sure yet to what extent it could play a role in reducing the cost of treatment. Mm. Of course, the more patients we diagnose, the more volume we have, and then it's a numbers game, right? Mm. But in principle, at the moment, the cost of treatment is very high because there's only a small number of patients, and therefore R&D costs are significantly higher for these types of innovative therapies. I always say it's great that there's hope now, that there is treatment available for some of these diseases, but we need to look at what funding mechanisms are available. And in this sense, we cannot rely on just the public sector, we cannot rely just on the private sector. We need to look at multiple and alternative pockets of funding, I would say, to make this a reality. So everybody has a place.
Would you be able to give us a sense of what kind of mechanism would work better for a case like rare disease? Are there any success stories that you have seen so far which could work well?
I'd like to think we're working on them. So we do provide cost-sharing solutions, which looks at the patient and their household's individual ability to pay. So there is an assessment that's being done to see how much the patient themselves would be able to contribute towards that cost of treatment. There's the industry that comes with a portion of treatment. There might be some level of insurance coverage, NGOs, there might be international donors. So this is really pooling of funds that makes access a reality. Of course, at Axios, we like to think of scalable and sustainable solutions. So in my opinion, this is one step towards the right direction.
Okay. For people who are watching this and just wondering how does Axios can help them, can you give us a sense when, say, a patient come to you, or a doctor or a stakeholder that works with you, how does that work, you know, that process of getting help from your company?
So a patient would typically be referred to Axios by their physician. There would be a choice in terms of potential treatment options, and based on that, if Axios has a program in country, they would be referred to us. Our teams then on the ground would contact the patient, go through with them, discuss their needs, and then identify if it's, for instance, affordability, what is their ability to pay, and what is the level of support that is required. And from that moment onwards, we follow up with each patient on a per patient per cycle basis, giving them also that emotional support that I was referring to earlier, so that they can access treatment but also stay on treatment.
And just how big is the Malaysian market today overall? Business of Axios?
I would say in Asia, Malaysia is one of our strategic markets. We've been in Malaysia since 2008. That was our first journey here. Then we came back in 2017 with more innovative solutions. And my hope and intent is to continue building and supporting patients.
Okay. I just want to turn the discussion to trends and also some of the challenges. So let's talk about trends first in terms of what is looking to be emerging healthcare trends that you are keeping an eye on and giving more focus.
I would say there is definitely a clear understanding now that just taking that medication is not enough. You need to continue to take that medication. And often as patients, whether it's a rare disease patient, whether it's any other chronic disease, that patient needs support. That patient might have different factors that impacts their ability to stay on treatment or not. So there is an increased focus on adherence. There is an increased focus on equitable access.
Of course, yeah.
And you mentioned data. There is a focus on data, but to understand what value these interventions that we do, or what value does treatment really bring to patients.
Okay. So we did talk a lot about from the patient's perspective. What about from a healthcare provider's perspective? What are some of the biggest gaps or challenges or barriers that they are facing right now?
I would say overall, there is a huge focus on the pandemic, which is now, yes, an endemic, but still it has had an impact on healthcare budgets overall, right? On the healthcare infrastructure overall. How do we continue to attend to patients? Some countries locked down the borders, and this had an economical impact. So how do we recover from that? These are the challenges that we see across most of the markets. Some never closed their borders and were able to swiftly make through, I would say. And then from a pure healthcare provider perspective, there was also the need to act quickly, which is not usually the way healthcare works, because it's very regulated, we take our time. But in this case, it was, there's a pandemic, we need to move fast. So I think there's been also adoption of digital, for sure. This is something that we see across markets, largely in Southeast Asia, and I would say in Malaysia in particular, we see there's been an appetite towards acknowledging that there is the need to have a tool to connect the healthcare provider and the system with the patient beyond what is going on in the doctor's office.
In your observation, what are some of the key lessons or key gains that has happened in the healthcare sector due to the pandemic? I know acceleration of digitalization is one of the upside, if you can call it, from the pandemic. What are other things that you think are very encouraging to see right now?
I would say definitely the uptake of digital. I would also say there is an increased focus in general on healthcare, right? People talk about it more. It's not something that is in the past. So there's an interest in understanding, perhaps in the future, how do we focus more on prevention?
Right. And just one final question about 5G. There's a lot of talk about 5G and its potential in the healthcare space. What do you see are some of the best case things that you can use 5G for when it comes to healthcare treatment and access?
5G definitely is something that's going to be a great asset when it comes to connectivity overall. Mm-hmm. But then is the infrastructure ready? Is it going to be fully functional? Probably it will take some time.
Okay.
But when we get there, it will mean that the connectivity between patients and the different stakeholders will be faster. Perhaps we will have specialists around the world providing consultations on live surgeries, and much more. So I think it's an exciting chapter, and we'll see how things go.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rochelle, for sharing your thoughts with us and also spending some time. Rochelle, of course, she's not Malaysian. She came from Dubai. So I'm very glad that you actually spent some time with us in Kuala Lumpur to talk a bit more about rare diseases. Appreciate your time on this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been tuning in to Awani Review with me, Cynthia. We'll catch you again in the next episode.